Hi, I'm Aaron.
Hi, and I'm Bas.
And welcome to episode 2 of Deciding Set. So we're halfway through the US Open. It's been a fantastic tournament so far. We did a preview last week. Just wanted to quickly touch base with you and just talk about what's been a fascinating tournament so far. Been a lot of upsets, been a lot of best of 5 set matches. What's really caught your attention so far, Bas?
Just the speed of the court means that there's been a lot of 5-set matches, as you said. I think they said this was the year of the most of them. So yeah, that's been really interesting. We made a few potential predictions that unfortunately haven't gone our way. I'm obviously going to start, of course, with your upset potential that you had of Querrey versus Zverev. Which unfortunately did not go your way. Any words on that, Aaron?
Yeah, it was always going to be a brave prediction, to be fair. I mean, obviously Zverev's been in fantastic form. But in fairness, Querrey did play very well in 2 of the 3 sets. The first 2, it was right till the end. There was nothing much in it, and then he got broken. But yeah, I mean, that was always you win some, you lose some, I guess. But no, there've been a whole host of options. Should we start on the women's side? Obviously... I mean, it seems a long time ago, doesn't it? But we were talking about Barty, and we both picked Osaka as the favourite. I know most people went with Barty, but obviously Osaka got through a couple of rounds, and then I don't know what you make of her loss to Leila Fernandez, because obviously it's not, to me, I watched a bit of that match, and obviously Osaka didn't look like she was completely off her game at the start. She won the first set, she served for the match, actually, so she was in control. But then... it's almost like you have to look at that result and then look at, almost forget what Fernandez has gone on to do. We've just seen now she's beaten Svitolina in 3 sets. She's beaten Kerber the round before. So how much is this a bad loss now for Osaka, and how much is it actually just losing to someone who looks like they could be one of the future stars of the game?
I really felt for Osaka. I still do, actually. I think it's incredibly difficult. She had that hiatus. She said that... it's all down to anxiety, and she very much focused on that, didn't she? She said that when she wins a match, she feels a sense of relief, but she doesn't feel a sense of joy, and if she doesn't do well, then she gets very upset and anxious, and it just, she doesn't like that. That's the main overriding feature. I think there's something to be said, isn't there, of like reaching that stage at a very early part in your career where there's no expectations, and I think a few of our players, it'll be really interesting to see what happens, because since then we've seen Andreescu, who had match point, but you know, unfortunately something must have happened that caused her to not manage to convert that. I guess you've had Barty, who's been really strong, and as you said, that's an upset as well that we hadn't predicted. Just moving on to Osaka, sorry, because that was your original question, I think this is going to be a big thing for her, because you know, it was when she said what she said at the French Open, I don't think that she had anticipated that the Grand Slams would react in this way, and she didn't think that they'd said that if she doesn't attend the press conference, that she won't be able to enter the other Grand Slams, that, you know, it would result in the sort of media attention that was drawn all around her, and then the Olympics probably didn't help matters because she was the face as far as that was concerned. I think it's going to be a big one for her. I mean, she did say that she's actually not sure when she'll play her next tennis match. And I really hope, I mean, she's so infinitely talented. I really admire the way she plays and her tenacity and just her honesty as well. She's very honest, and I wouldn't want her this to be the last that we see of her. But I am quite fearful for her. But hopefully maybe just a break. I mean, I don't know what you think. You ask me.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement. I mean, look... when she made those comments at the French Open, I'll be completely honest, before I really was aware of what else is going on, I thought they were ill-judged comments at the time. I did. I thought that no one's above the rules at press conferences. But we have to almost part that and put that to one side. I mean, I think that's enough's been said about that. We have to actually look at someone's well-being, their mental health, and clearly she's not in a good place. I felt really, really sorry for her, seeing her press conference after that loss. And she's a great player, you're absolutely right. I mean, you don't win 4 Grand Slams at such a young age if you're not on a path to great things. I mean, we're talking about someone, you don't like to put too much pressure on someone at a young age, but we're talking about someone who really was destined to have well, she already has, is going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, she could retire today. We hope she doesn't, but she's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, someone that's destined to do such even greater things, it is a real shame. But I think at the moment, tennis is really not important for her. I think it's taking some time away from the game, really being proud of what she's done, really kind of doing what she needs to do to kind of to get back. Because we all want to see a fit and firing Naomi Osaka. She's great for the game. And, you know, but at the same time, as much as I want to see her back, it's really hard to say. I mean, she could easily get herself right and come out and win the Open next year. It wouldn't surprise me, but it's difficult because there's so many young girls coming through now. There's so many girls that are talented that the game does move on, you know, so there's no guarantee, absolutely no guarantee that she's going to be back to the level she is. But I hope that's not the case, and we definitely wish her well.
Yeah, I really hope that you're right, that she does come back. But I mean, the amount of pressure that she's had on her, she transcends tennis, actually. Like I said, she was the face of the Olympics. She has her own sort of clothing line for Nike, doesn't she? And I'm sure that, yes, she has a Barbie doll that was even released specifically as a role model. So there are so many people that look to her. I mean, I know these are probably not big things in the grand scheme of things. It's just the fact she was a household name, and she was already being compared at such a young age to Serena Williams. I hope that maybe we've seen Barty as an example of someone who took some time out of tennis and she went on to play something else entirely. I'm not saying that would happen with Osaka, but look at how well Barty's playing now. I hope maybe something like that would happen to her. I'm not sure about next year, but you know, I would love to say that maybe in 2 years from now, or you know, it doesn't even necessarily be at a Grand Slam. I think she probably would start with a Masters kind of run, or even like a 250 to start with, but we'd really be ashamed to not see her play again.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, obviously there are slight differences. Obviously Barty wasn't at the top of the game when she stopped playing tennis for a year or two and went to cricket, but I haven't seen enough of what Barty said at the time, and she wasn't that well documented because she was, you know, not that highly ranked when she went to play cricket. But the fact that she decided to pack up tennis and play another sport, clearly she wasn't in love with the game in the way that she is now to want to make that change. So yeah, we're not saying something like that for Osaka, but maybe that time away in the same way that Barty had to play cricket, and that time playing cricket made her realise actually how much she loved tennis, and that's brought her back to, I mean, it's a fairy tale story in a way for Barty, how she's come to full circle. So we wish Osaka well, and obviously we'll, on this podcast, we're certainly hoping to see her back in action at some point, because, you know, I think she's great for the game. But does give a really good segue, though, onto Barty. I mean, Osaka was my favourite, it was your favourite as well. Most people actually had Barty as the favourite, and you can understand that. She won Wimbledon, she obviously won Cincinnati, but I do feel, I don't know what you think, I think Osaka's loss, and it was a shock loss in three sets to Fernandez. We give a lot of credit to Fernandez, it was a good performance, but Barty then to go out the next day in a third set tiebreak to Shelby Rogers, who, very solid professional, you know, hard-working player, but I don't think anyone saw that result coming, and I wonder how much Osaka going out really put more pressure on Barty's shoulders. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the pressure was on, wasn't it? Just thinking, oh, great, the draws opened up. The favourite, as far as she was seeing, suddenly was no longer there, and it's dealing with these shocks that often can turn the game completely. So I don't think you're wrong there. We should definitely talk about Leila Fernandez in a little bit, though, because she's been definitely the breakout star, hasn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she's been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, as I say, I genuinely thought after she beat Osaka, and she did play brilliantly. Osaka, yes, okay, we can argue she wasn't at her best, and there was a couple of things there. But then she was a set and a breakdown against Kerber. Kerber has actually been one of the form players in the last few months. She's just picking up her form again, and I thought maybe Kerber's a dark horse here to go all the way. To come back from a set and a breakdown, so often we see these young players, they're quite capable of beating the best player in the world or one of the best in the world, and then they have a dip the next match. She didn't do that. She beat Kerber. She's just beaten Svitolina in a final set tiebreak, and here she is as a teenager in her first Grand Slam semi-final. I mean, it's a phenomenal story, and I genuinely don't think this is a fluke. We've heard her name for a while. The way she's had these wins, I think she's definitely one for us to watch out for.
I agree. Well, I mean, it will more than likely be a new winner. Really, if you look at who's left in the draw, the only person left, as you said, as a Grand Slam champion is Krejcikova, and she's playing tonight, so we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, I mean, just goes to show you that the women's draw is truly wide open.
It truly is. I mean, just a quick word on that, as you say, Krejcikova, and it's incredible to think she's on a US Open debut. And her one Grand Slam title was this year at the French, and she is the lone Grand Slam champion left. You'd think of Serena, obviously, she didn't play. Muguruza lost to Krejcikova in the previous round. Obviously, Bianca Andreescu went out last night, as you said, at match points to Sakkari. So that, and obviously, Benchik, who we'll come to in a second, she beat Swiatek yesterday. So, real opportunity for someone to step up. And just a word on, from a British point of view, obviously, Raducanu, she... I think the third qualifier to make the quarterfinals at the US Open. Had a bit of fortune, we have to say. Obviously, Jennifer Brady, that would have been a tricky first-round match, Australian Open finalist. But I guess you have to take advantage of what's in front of you and deal with the cards that you're dealt. And she's done that. And actually, credit to her as well, because like we talked about Osaka at Wimbledon, she clearly suffered from some anxiety or some nerves in that fourth round against Tomljanovic, and she's been able to deal with that here. So it's a brilliant run for her and for British tennis, I guess, to the quarterfinals. Personally, she's got Benchik, and I think well as Raducanu's done to make it this far. I just think Benchik on current form, winning the Olympic gold, the form she looks in now, just feels like she's turned a corner. I think that's probably going to be a bridge too far for Raducanu, but fantastic run. What are your thoughts there?
I'm not sure how I feel about the Benchik-Raducanu match. I mean, I think Benchik, with the Olympic win, might be feeling some pressure, especially as she's there supporting her nation, especially with Federer not being there. I don't know if that really makes a huge difference, but in terms of...
And no Stan as well.
And no Stan, but, you know, the pressure, I mean, this is what we're talking about. Mental resilience has been the interesting point for me of the entire first week, actually. But it'd be interesting. I hope she can pull through and win that. But yes, as you said, my goodness, so to go from having a panic attack and clearly not being able to play in Wimbledon around the home crowd to suddenly going to a night match, wasn't it? And or evening match.
Well, it was a late day match, but it was on Arthur Ashe against an American. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. Okay, Shelby Rogers, something happened there because she was two love up and then she kind of collapsed to 2-1. But be that as it may, to beat an American, as you say, on that big stage at Arthur Ashe.
It's daunting. I mean, it's much, much bigger, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. It was the earlier set, but it's just it had gone into the evening.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she wouldn't have been used to that kind of crowd before, I imagine. Still an amazing win.
Definitely. So, and then just looking at the draw, you've got Pliskova, Sakkari. I mean, that's tough to pick because Pliskova has been in good form lately. She's been coming to a lot of finals. I mean,
it'll be interesting to see how she again deals with that. It's the pressure of I've managed to get there, but I haven't been able to convert it. Can I convert? Can I do it? Her game is definitely good enough that she should win a Grand Slam. She is a Grand Slam champion to be, but you know, fortune favors the brave, and the question is, who's the bravest, really?
Well, exactly. And then we've got Fernandez, we've discussed. She's into the semis and she'll play the winner of Krajinovic Sabalenka. So I'm just going to put you on the spot. We've done some predictions, and obviously all of our predictions were slightly out of kilter last week with all the upsets. But just looking at this draw, who do you think is going to be the champion on Saturday?
I actually think Leyla Fernandez might do it.
I'm going to go along with you. There's just something about the way this fairy tale run's going. You don't see these happen very often enough.
She doesn't seem fazed by anything.
No.
She's played a very impressive game. The others, they're a bit prone to potential emotional upsets because, you know, if you look at Sakkari, she had that loss, which was, she was very emotional. Was that at Wimbledon?
Yeah, she did have a tight loss there. She also had a tight loss at the French as well, if yes. You remember. She came to the semis. Yeah, the two Greeks do really well, Tsitsipas and her, and then she had that really tight loss.
That's right. And then Pliskova, we've already just discussed, and then Raducanu, it's going to be a lot of pressure for her. She might be feeling the pressure of the fact that she's come so far as a Briton.
And I think you have to say
British representative.
Greater run as it's been, and no disrespect to any of her opponents, she has beaten some decent players, but Benchik is a step up in class, you know, compared to what she's faced. So you know, if she plays well, I'm sure she can give it a good match. I just think it's going to be a step up in class now.
It's just about, as I said, who's going to be the bravest.
And I think, actually, it's where it's strange. I'd go with Fernandez, and I think what's very strange about this tournament is normally you'd have a multiple Grand Slam champion or someone that you just feel you're going to have to get through that person, whereas you're looking at it, Benchik's never really gone deep in a Grand Slam before. You know, she's never made a finals of a Slam. But she's probably looking at this and is probably one of the favourites now on current form, just because no one's won the US Open in this draw and only one person has won a Grand Slam. So I really think it's up for grabs, and as you say, who handles the pressure? But yeah, I would say Fernandez has got a really good shot of, well, that'll be quite historic if she can pull that off.
Mm.
And it would keep it Canadian after obviously Andreescu won it 2 years ago. Should we move on to the men's draw? Obviously we've had some fantastic results. Just to quickly run through, obviously last week we had some upsets. Just looking through, obviously in the first round we had Andy Murray. He took Tsitsipas to 5 sets. For me, there was some controversy that came out from that match and the toilet breaks and toilet gate and all that. I don't really want to get into all of that. But for me, I think, you know, rather than looking at it from Murray's point of view as a disappointment, I think there's some positives there. I don't think Tsitsipas has been in great form since the French Open. I think when he had that close match against Djokovic in the final, he's not really been the same player. You know, he lost first round at Wimbledon. He lost early at the, you know, in, well, he had a close match with Zverev in Cincinnati, but he's just not looked the same player. But, you know, credit to Murray, because in his recent matches in the last year and a half against top 20, he has looked a little bit lightweight, to be honest, the way he played against Shapovalov at Wimbledon. Obviously, Felix last year at the US Open, Stan at the French Open last year, they've all been quite comprehensive straight sets. So I actually thought this was actually a good performance. Do I think that Murray's going to get back and win slams and go deep? No, I don't, because I don't think his body can actually go for 2, 3, 4 of those matches. That's the problem. I think even if he'd got through that match, he would have struggled in the next match. But I think he could be very proud of taking Tsitsipas to 4 or 5 sets. Look, about the bathroom toilet gate, I think what was a shame was, whatever we think about that, it did feel like in the end, whether I agree with what Tsitsipas did or not, do I think he pushed the rules to the limit? Yes, I probably do think he did. I think that, unfortunately, it's not clear enough. This is what people are saying. You know, you can go to the bathroom, but there isn't a limit on how much time. He went for quite a while. Now, obviously, it became a big controversy. But I do think probably it's something that needs to be addressed. There probably needs to be a bit of a clearer time. And maybe that's one of the rules. Maybe that's something that's going to be looked at. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I agree with you. I mean, he said that he tries not to get involved in this, and he tries to not look into what other people have said. He's not wrong in saying that it's within the rules, so therefore there's no clear definition on what is allowed, what isn't allowed. I mean, it obviously did impact him, because he went from taking his entire bag to taking just a very small pack with him, which looked like it probably held the size of his kit. Whether, you know, anything else was in there or not, I don't really want to get into that, because I'd like to think that on this grand stage no one would be thinking along those lines. But clearly for him, the pressure of being the world number 3 and to have got to that and not have won a Grand Slam, and then he's thinking, I want to win this. And you can tell he's one of those players who's a very emotional player. You can feel his emotions on the court. You can feel him getting down on himself. You can feel the little wins and the changes. So whether that's just because he's a very Greek player, I think that's just naturally from what I know of Greek people. It's, they wear their heart on their sleeve very much, don't they? So
absolutely. And I do think you're right. I do think, actually, as much as he says he doesn't pay attention, I do think he's a sensitive guy. I do think he's paying attention to what's being said. Even if you look at, we'll come on to obviously his exit from the tournament, but his toilet breaks actually got less and less in time. The more he was asked at the press conferences, the less they got. Actually, his last match, it was only about 3 minutes. So, and there's no real argument about 3 minutes. That's not a massive problem. So it was the length that was the problem. So let's see. You know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, and let's see if that's something that's going to be changed in the future. So we don't really want to be talking about that too much. Let's move on from that. Obviously to the third round, where he played Carlos Alcaraz. Now, we've talked about two teenagers who've had great runs, Leila Fernandez and Raducanu, but obviously Alcaraz is the third. Now, I said to you, I think, that I thought this had the makings of a decent match. You know, Alcaraz has been putting together some really good numbers. You know, he's the youngest guy to make 2 third rounds of a Grand Slam since Djokovic. You know, and he's just been putting together so many good numbers. He's one of the youngest guys in the top 50. Well, he's just outside the top 50, but close to it in the top 100. But I didn't know that he had it in him to really beat Tsitsipas at this stage. But he won the first set fairly comfortably. Break up in the second. Tsitsipas comes storming back. And then Tsitsipas goes 5-2 up in the third. And you really think at this stage, Tsitsipas is kind of going to go 2-6-1 up and win the match. But no, Alcaraz comes back, wins it on a tiebreak. And then you think, well, maybe the upset's on. Only for Tsitsipas to win the 4-6 love. And to be honest, Alcaraz looked completely spent. And I remember saying to you that he's a young guy, he's 18. At this stage, he probably hasn't played a lot of 5-set matches. He's probably conditioned for best of three. It's probably gone. Suddenly in the fifth, Alcaraz starts serving really well and actually generating a lot of power off the ground. Wasn't really able to make an impact on Tsitsipas' serve, but just kept holding, kept himself in the set. Match went to a fifth-set tiebreak, and the guy played some of the most attacking tennis I've seen. He just really, Tsitsipas had no answer. And the more big the point got, the more pressure the point was, the more attacking Alcaraz became, which is very, very rare for a kid that age. So that put him into the fourth round, and that was just a high-quality match, wasn't it? For me, that's the match of the year, but on the men's side. What were your thoughts?
Well, I'm hoping that the match of the year has not come yet. Maybe we're still going to see that in the next few days worth of play, but certainly it was one of the best matches of...
I should say so far, match of the year so far.
Yeah, sorry. Oh. I'm being finicky. But, or maybe I'm just hoping that because we're getting further into the tournament, that I'm hoping that we haven't seen the best shot. But yes, I mean, I keep mentioning this, what resilience, but that was really interesting to see how you can recover almost in a Djokovic-like fashion in some ways, I would say, that you seem like you're tired, you feel like maybe he's down, he's out, he's not going to get there physically. He seemed like he was cramping a bit, he wasn't moving that well, and then suddenly the way he was moving, really, I wouldn't have really thought it was the same match. I would have thought that if you put, you know, set one, set four and set five together, that would be what you'd expect. But it's almost like you can forget what happened in the middle. Very impressive the way you did it, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Definitely one who's probably going to win.
Oh, absolutely. And
multiple Grand Slams.
And just so, and he's obviously since then played Gojewicz from Germany in the next round. Tricky match, because having beaten Tsitsipas, the win of his life, and incidentally, it made him the youngest player since Sampras and Chang in 89 to reach the fourth round of the US Open. And obviously, he's then the favourite against Gojewicz. 2-1 down, he wins that. So he's into the quarterfinal. That'll happen tonight. We'll come on to the quarterfinals in a minute. And just to quickly sort of, you know, just looking through the draw, obviously, disappointment for Shapovalov. I was kind of hoping after Wimbledon that he was going to make another run. I know he's been on a bit of bad form since then, but won his first couple of rounds easy.
It's a shame to see that.
And then obviously Lloyd Harris. But Lloyd Harris, though, in fairness, I mean, I actually thought when Nadal lost at Washington to Lloyd Harris, maybe that's a poor result. But actually, maybe that doesn't look such a bad result now. He the guy made the finals in Dubai.
He's playing really well, isn't he?
He handled Riley Opelka's serve like no problem at all. That's not that easy to do. He made it look like, you know, just a regulation serve. And we'll come on to it. I've been wrong about Zverev before, so I'm not going to say too much. But let's see. That's tomorrow. And then the other big players, obviously Medvedev has largely cruised through his draw. But today he did have some difficulties today, though, which was quite interesting. But he has got a very sort of decent draw.
I wouldn't say I'm overtly surprised by the fact he's had a little bit of a dip today, just because at some point during this tournament, if he, you know, facing the people that he's faced or the way that he's been winning, I think it's inevitable. It's probably good for him in some ways that he's had a little bit of a dip now, because he's got the next couple of matches coming forward. We imagine that he probably will be in the final against Djokovic.
Well, he played Van der Sloot today, and credit to Van der Sloot. You know, he had to qualify. He's come through to the obviously the fourth round, which is a fantastic achievement. Through to the quarters. So, you know, fantastic achievement by him to reach the quarterfinals as a qualifier. And Yeah, I mean, to take a set off Medvedev in this kind of form, 7-5 in the fourth set, is actually a really good result, having lost the first two, 6-3, 6-love. So he could be really proud of his achievements. We should just quickly touch on, obviously, Zverev and Djokovic. I mean, Zverev, for me, I don't know about you, I actually don't know where his level is. I really don't, because if I look at the draw, Querrey, I know I made that prediction. Querrey actually played him quite tough, but you're not going to get many rallies. They're both big servers, just a break or two in each set. Jack Sock actually played him off the court for one set, won it 6-3, and then he had a bit of an injury and wasn't able to keep up, and he retired in the fourth. And Zverev has actually said that if Sock had kept up that level from the first set, he was in big trouble and probably would have lost the match. So, obviously, and then yesterday we had the match against Sinner, which was three sets to Zverev. Zverev is playing very solid, there's no doubt about that, but Sinner certainly had his chances in two of the sets and probably should have won the third. He was 4-1 up in the tiebreak. So, really don't know where Zverev's level is. I mean, obviously he's a big favourite against Harris, but... And I'm not going to make a prediction for Harris, but just the way Harris is playing, the way he returned Opelka's serve, the way he beat Nadal at Washington, I don't think this is going to be a straightforward match for Zverev. I don't know. And let's not forget, for all the hype around him winning the Olympics, he's won Cincinnati, he made the finals here last year, he's actually not beaten many top players in slams. He's never beaten a top 10 player in a Grand Slam. Harris isn't one, but it does show if something. But Harris is probably playing at a top 10, top 15 level at the moment.
Yeah, let's face it, the pressure is all on Zverev, isn't it, for that? So it'll be interesting to see what happens to Zverev.
And prediction for that match?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think the way that Zverev has been playing, not so much in this tournament, but in the last year, probably fifth set, he'll get it. But I think it will be extremely close. It could be anyone's match.
I think I'll go with that. I think just... with his experience and how he's been winning matches, I think he'll come through, but I think it could go five. I agree with you. And lastly, obviously, we're dissecting the draw. We have to obviously talk about the favourite, and obviously Djokovic. He's been going for the Grand Slam, as we know. It's amazing weight of expectation on him, isn't it? You know, going for the Grand Slam, four in a year, but also trying to do the break the all-time Slam record at the same time. So obviously we've kept an eye on his matches. First match was quite tricky, actually, playing against someone that he's practiced with before. That was certainly a tricky match for him. But against Roon, obviously won the first set 6-1. We thought, okay, it's going to be a nice, easy performance. But then second set was lost on a tiebreak. And to be fair, Roon cramped up for the third and fourth set, so we kind of came through that. Second match against Griekspoor was straight sets, a little bit more straightforward. Nishikori was in the third, and obviously Novak's won the last 18 sets against Nishikori on a hard court, but...
It wasn't the same Nishikori.
Yeah, I was going to say, he lost the first set, but I didn't think it was...
I really don't know what Nishikori is doing, but he actually looks younger and fitter than he's ever looked, and to me it seemed very much like a grudge match. I mean, it was a very, very good level of tennis, so it was a joy to watch that.
Absolutely. I mean, at the Olympics, just a few weeks ago, Novak, I think, beat him 2-love or something, and that's kind of what's come to happen normally when he plays Nishikori, but it didn't look that kind of match, and I actually thought he played well. I mean, last night, Brooksby, young American player, played very solid in the first set. I think, he really was waiting to see what Novak did. Novak, in fairness, by his lofty standards, did not play his best set at all. You know, he really looked not at the races for me in the first set. It felt like he was getting the feel of the conditions, feel of the court. Was missing a lot, but then once he got that break in the second set, it was just a different match, wasn't it? And I actually think that match has played him into some form now. By the fourth set, it was just a different person. You know, it was almost a Novak that we know as the Grand Slam champion. Look, I think there's a lot of pressure here on Novak, but I think if anyone can handle it, he can. So we'll just have a quick look now, just to round off at the matches that we've got left for the men's, the quarters. So we've got Novak Berrettini. That's tomorrow's night match, repeat of the Wimbledon final. They also played in the French Open quarters as well. I think that's actually a good matchup for Novak. I think Berrettini's got a limited backhand, huge serve, huge forehand. I think Novak in four there. What do you reckon?
Probably the way he's been playing, it has been mainly four sets. I'd like to say it'd be three sets, but I just don't. I can't confidently call that.
To be honest, even if Novak's playing at his best, he could lose a set there just because Berrettini's got such a huge serve. You could get a tie break or something like that.
Absolutely.
And then obviously the Felix against who, and a word on Felix, I think he's credit to him, because obviously he's seeded 12 here, having come to the quarterfinals of Wimbledon, which was his first ever quarterfinal. It's not, you don't always see players back it up. They often have a bit of a dip. You know, Xabi, I think Xabi will come back. He's had a bit of a dip here. But Felix has actually backed up his performance. And I think that's such a fascinating matchup, Felix against Alcaraz, because Alcaraz probably didn't expect to come this far this soon. Felix would have hoped to and probably thought he could, but they're both here, and now one of them's going to be in a semi-final of a Grand Slam for the first time. This is probably the quarterfinal I find the hardest to call, because from what I've seen, in terms of ranking, Felix is the favourite. In terms of form, I actually think Alcaraz is playing slightly better, but he's had 2 5-set matches. So if Alcaraz is fit, I think Alcaraz can win. But I think just going on length of matches and so forth, I'm probably gonna go with Felix in 4 sets. But what's your prediction on Felix against Alcaraz?
I think it will be a 5-setter. Very difficult to call. I think it will probably be Felix, but it's really, really difficult to call. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I just remembered something, that 2018, wasn't that when Felix and Shapovalov were playing and he had his heart problem? And I know they haven't played each other now, and obviously we'd look forward to seeing that in the future. But he said, didn't he, that don't worry, you'll be playing big matches in the future. And this is what, 3 years on now.
Well, absolutely. And then look, you're right, it's so close. Shapovalov's come to the semis at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And Felix is one match away from the semis at the US Open. So it is coming true now. They both are at the top of the game. So,
yes. Yeah. Yeah, I hope he does manage to do it. But they both have such a beautiful game. I really couldn't call that one. And I'm not sure I have a favourite particularly either.
And I actually think for Shapovalov, as much as they're friends, and we don't know how close they are now or what goes on, but I actually think Felix doing well here, and actually to a lesser extent Fernandez, because it's a different game, but Felix will help Shapovalov. I think it's actually a good thing for Shapovalov, even though he went out early, because Andy Roddick used to talk about a healthy jealousy all the time, and it's not a real jealousy, but he said he needed Marty Fish, he needed James Blake in the top 10, because it used to push him, because he knew that he wanted to stay American. It's not just about being America number one, but that's, you have to first be the best in your country. Yeah, and they used to all push each other, and actually they, so, you know, you look at American tennis back then with Blake and Fish and Robbie Ginepri, and they all did, you know, they all probably had much better careers than a lot of the top Americans have now. No disrespect to the current guys that we have, you know. So I actually do think that that could well happen for Shapovalov, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him have a good end to the season. So I think that just about wraps up everything. I mean, I think just we have looked at the women's draw as well. And you gave a prediction on Sakari Pliskova. It's really hard to call, isn't it?
I don't know. I think the thing is that Sakari currently has a lot of confidence, and if Pliskova's even a little bit tentative or unsure, then Sakari may well take it. But then Pliskova can also play quite an aggressive game. It's so difficult to call. I don't really feel confident to give a prediction, really.
I'm going to go Pliskova in 3. And the reason I'm going to go with that is just because she's come to so many finals lately. It just tells me that she's going to handle the pressure of a big moment better than Sakari. I think Sakari could blow her off the court, but I think the closer that match gets, the more I'm going to lean towards Pliskova.
She may be quite emotional though as well. I think Sakari might feel all the pressure on her. I guess if I had to make a prediction, I probably would think it will be Pliskova, because she's got all that experience that has taken her to several finals before. So yeah, I guess I probably would choose that, but honestly, these matches are quite close, so it's very hard to.
And then the other one, to just to get a quick call from you, was Sabalenka against Krejcikova.
I think Sabalenka. I hope Sabalenka. I think she's got a fantastic game.
I think on a hard court, you'd have. I mean, Krejcikova, what she's done this year has been fantastic, winning the French Open singles and doubles. But if Sabalenka brings her A game, she's going to be really tough to stop.
We also don't know how much of an effect the talk of, you know, again, breaks and stuff may have affected Krejcikova, but, you know, look.
Yeah, there was also some controversy there with the Muguruza match, but as I say, let's see what happens. I mean, I think it's, you know, we don't want to go too much into that. It's more going to be what comes out of this and what the powers that be decide to do.
No, I agree completely.
And I think I made a call on the Benchik Redekan. I think Redekan has done brilliantly to come this far. I just think Benchik's a quality opponent who's in great form. But would you go along with that as well, or what's your prediction there?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be Leila Fernandez for the win.
Brilliant. Okay, well, look, thanks once again, everyone, for joining us. It's been a fascinating tournament so far, so really hope you keep enjoying the remaining matches and what's been... Well, I think it's been one of the most exciting Grand Slam tournaments so far in many years. And we'll be back at the end of the tournament to do another show, just reviewing everything. And in the meantime, I've been Aaron.
And I'm Das. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all soon.